What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again, it's gone, it's into the bullpen, this game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field, it's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires, swing and a miss, Frank Lee, it's over!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 247. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You're going to want to be following along down the stretch while the Sox make this playoff push. Subscribe, rate 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to WEEI on YouTube. You can find our Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on all of our videos and then find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Just Gordon and Sammy here today. Pat is getting ready for a week-long bender. So it's going to be the two of us for a couple of shows, I think. But, man, I can't get enough of this team right now. I can't. You cannot go to Fenway Park and beat this team. They do not lose at Fenway Park. And after 2 years, and we talked about it a little bit at the beginning of this run where it was like, hey, for the first time in a few years, they're actually winning games at Fenway. But like, they're not just winning games at Fenway. They are throttling teams at Fenway. They're not losing at Fenway. Every 5 seconds, you look at the dugout and you got airplane celebration going on, which, by the way, I love because everyone's in on the joke. Like with some of the other celebrations with some teams and with this team in the past, it's like, oh, it's an inside joke and like we get it, but you don't. But this, it's like, we all get it. And like Roman and Marcelo are the kings of the airplane celebration. Like I can't get enough of what I'm seeing right now on the field. Every time we come on this podcast, it's following multiple wins. And this team, they won 10 games in a row. And then, yeah, they struggled for 6 games after the All-Star break. Yeah, I get it. They're right back on the bender right now. We're going again. And they're on, it's 7 in a row right now. Going into a crochet start after 6 in a row felt good, but obviously winning 7 is winning 7. I can't get enough of it. This is awesome. We haven't had this since we started the podcast. Like, this is the first time where it's like, yeah, this team is going to the playoffs. They're not just in a good position to make the playoffs, they're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, we kind of had to adjust as podcasters to this Red Sox team because, like you said, we've been covering bad Red Sox baseball in August for the last few years. Like not competitive. We've done some coping. We've done some raging in a bad way. Just it's been mostly negative this point of the season. This is the first time we've gotten to be excited about where a Red Sox team is heading to this point. And Gordo, you mentioned that two series stretch after the All-Star break, the Cubs and Phillies, the stuff people were saying is so funny to look back on, like, oh, wow, yeah. you really are getting a taste of reality now. It's really starting to settle in with what this team is, okay? You know, this is a reminder of who these guys... Dude, it was 6 games. It was 6 fucking... And they won 2 of them. It's not like they got swept. So now you look ahead, they're on fire right now. What's it, 7 in a row? They're 13 games over. Their best mark in years. It feels great. And every night, it feels like they have a chance to win, especially at Fenway, like you said. But every night, no matter what, I never feel like this team doesn't have a shot. Even the other day, Hunter Brown versus Cooper Criswell, huge mismatch, still got the job done. This team is so much fun. I can't wait until October. I feel great about them getting there. I'm not calling them a playoff team yet.
Oh,
but God, I feel very good about it. Hey, I lived through 2012. I've learned my lesson. I feel great about this team's chances to make the playoffs, though.
I'm quickly checking. We're recording this right after the game, so I'm quickly checking some scores. The Jays are up 3-2. The Yankees and the Rangers are tied at 0. But no, I mean, I think back to May And in particular, there were the Brewers series sticks out. There were a few. We talked about it at the All-Star break. We had, you know, we gave out all the superlatives, the awards, all of that. But we also talked about the negatives, and it's like, what was the low point of the year? And mine was trading Devers, and you and Pat both took the Angels sweep, which was after the Devers trade. But
it's basically the same thing. That's basically the same thing.
It was. But another candidate for that would have been the Brewers series, where they also got swept. And I mean, at that point, it felt like they were losing one run games every single day. They were getting walked off every time, every game on the road. They were losing in extra innings every time the game got there. And it's just, I can't, like, at that point in time, I was sitting talking to friends and family thinking, if this team continues at this pace, it's going to end up being one of my least favorite Boston sports teams of my life. And that was May. We're in August now. And I get a lot of it is because we just haven't had a run like this in years, but it's becoming one of my favorite Red Sox teams that I've watched. And like, you can take the World Series teams out because obviously those teams are going to be the top four. They won the World Series, but this team has that magic that a 2021 team felt like it had. But even that team floundered in the second half. You're not seeing that from this group. You're not.
No, and the difference is pitching and having a true ace. I can't stress enough, Garrett Crochet, just having him, even the days he doesn't pitch, just Cora being able to look ahead, all right, when do we get 7 innings, 2 earned runs out of Garrett Crochet? Okay, that's in a day. That means I can go to this pitcher, be a little aggressive. It's just huge. On top of the on-field stuff, which is the biggest no-brainer of all time, this team is a lot of fun. I love the just the camaraderie around the team. The airplane thing, I feel like there's a lot of good celebrations around Major League Baseball nowadays. That's got to be one of the best. And I think for us, literally us, me, you, Pat, Joe, that's kind of like our kind of humor, where these guys almost in their heads die. And then they're like, ah, remember when we almost died? And now we're like, yo, we almost died. The airplane, near-death experience. Woo, let's bond over it. I like that. I think it shows, you know, good sense of humor, of course, but also strong attitudes. And that's what you need to play in a town like Boston, where when you're bad, boy, do people like us get on you.
Yeah.
And we're loud, and sometimes we're assholes about it. But when you play well, you get Gordo going, oh, I love you guys.
Seriously. No, and like you talk to, you hear the quotes, go back to some of the players who've experienced both winning and losing, both personal success and personal failure in Boston. A Rick Porcello quote that I don't have in front of me at the moment sticks out to me. He says he'll talk to teammates who talk about how hard it is to play in Boston. It's like, yeah, like if you suck, you're going to hear it, but it makes you want to be better. And it makes it so that when you are better, both as an individual and as a team, you feel the reward. Like, that's why I like to, like, people always get on me for watching like the Celtics when they were bad during the year they ended up making the finals. And every time, like, oh, I'd have friends being like, come like play video games right now. And I'd be like, no, I'm watching the Celtics. And they're like, they suck. And it's like, no. To feel like the benefits of a good team. Like, yeah, anyone can tune in and watch a good team. And like, if that's you, like, by all means, like, watch sports however you want to watch sports. But for me, like, I feel so much better in times like this because I sat through 2022, because I sat through 2023, because I sat through 2024. Like, this has been a long time coming. And yeah, they weren't good earlier in the year. You can talk about sitting through the first half of this season, the first 2 months of this season, I should say. And it makes what they're doing right now feel all that much more special. And it just feels like there's so much buy-in from the fan base. Like, Sammy, I've had so many people text me and ask about, oh my God, what's going on with Roman Anthony? Like, how hurt is he?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, panic. And it's like, okay, let's relax. It's a small back thing. He's going to be out a day. But like, tons and tons and tons of people texting me. And it just shows not just the buy-in to the team from the fan base, but the buy-in to Roman Anthony as the next superstar of this team, that a small back thing that's going to keep him out 2 games brings that much panic. It says a lot.
When was the last time the Red Sox had a true superstar on the team? I think I have the answer, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, I'll follow that up with a question. Can a true superstar be a pitcher? Because they don't play every day.
Yeah, like, yeah, for sure. I think Paul Skenes is a superstar.
Yeah, I was going to say Skenes might be a super, but like, I'd argue, Crochet's a superstar. He is.
No, but when was the last time? Because right now in my head, I'm thinking Crochet's a superstar. Roman is going to be a superstar. Bregman, I don't know if he's a superstar, but he's awesome and he's very famous. So that's close enough. But when was the last guy you would qualify as a superstar?
Okay, well, I Devers was incredible. I wouldn't classify him as a superstar. So I think
agree.
The answer is gonna be the Mookie and Sale combo. And yep. JD Martinez in that 2018 season was a superstar. So I guess you would say Mookie in 2019.
I think there's something more than just being really good to being a superstar. Like Mookie.
Definitely.
Aura. People like to talk about aura. Mookie on the Red Sox. I won't talk about the Dodgers because I don't watch him every day like I did with the Sox. But that guy, just everything he did, he had the necklace from the fan that the fan gave him, and he hits the home run with Eck on the call that one night. Just big moment after big moment. And then, of course, also wins MVP, Silver Slugger, Gold Glove, World Series, same year. Stuff like that. Like, superstar. I think Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers were a tad not below quite. That. Like, great players. But superstar, yeah, I would agree. 2019 and then like prime Chris Sale.
Mookie Betts was like bowling perfect games and winning MVPs and dunking basketballs and running NFL receiver caliber routes on football. Like, yeah, he's a superstar, not just on the baseball field, but in life. And the Red Sox had that for a while. And you're right, they haven't. Last year, Duran played like it. But to be a superstar in this league, you can't just have a superstar season. You got to have multiple superstar seasons. You got to be good enough so that people not only acknowledge what you're doing, but know that it's going to continue. And you got to be marketable, and you have to be that, like, the face of the team off the field.
Marketable is a really good word for this. Like, your name is Mookie Betts. That sounds like a superstar. That's a superstar name right there. Roman Anthony. Marcelo Meyer. Like, yeah. those are superstar names. So that, yeah, I actually think that matters. You don't need that. Like, Chris Sale is kind of a normal name, but he's a superstar. In his prime, he was. Not his whole career, but in his prime with the Red Sox, and then I would say last year with Atlanta to a lesser degree just because he was under the radar more. But I digress. Yeah, it's hard to find superstars in baseball, but it feels like the Red Sox have one with Crochet and are on the verge of having another with Roman Anthony.
I agree with you, Sammy. And maybe we're being a little bit, because we listed all of those qualifications, and I do want to talk about Jaron Duran here, because he had a superstar season last year. He is one of the voices of this team, both in the locker room and outwardly to the fan base. He is a super, he has a superstar image. He's got a superstar name, and
he's got like a superstar kind of story with the mental health stuff that he went through and talking about on the documentary. I think that it's like an origin story of sorts.
True. Yeah, all of that. Yeah, and he was one of the faces of a Netflix documentary on the team. So yeah, he's got all that stuff. And I feel like with him more than other people, for some reason, because it's with all of us, myself included, he took a long time to get to where he got to last season. And even the year before last, where he really broke out, it took him a while to get there. And it created this sort of distrust between the fans and his performance that it was going to continue. But
which I think is fair. I think it's fair to have your doubts. It's fair to have healthy doubts, not just buy in one great. And it wasn't his only good season, but that was his only holy shit season. But continue.
But yeah, this is now year three of him being a really, like, because go back. Since the start of July, this is going into today where he had one of the big hits. He put them on the board with an RBI double in game two here. And he's, since the start of July going into today, hitting .298 with a .1043 OPS. Sox 21-6 in that span. And it goes with what we've been saying. I mean, Jaron Duran struggled for the first 3 months of the season. And
I remember we were talking for the first
3 months of the season. When he goes, they go. And they're going because he's going.
I absolutely agree. And when we were talking about maybe moving him in trades or what would that look like at the deadline, there was a point his OPS went below 700. And we were like, what are you going to get for this guy? That last 2024 looks like such a fluke. And now he's just completely bounced back. Now he's close to 800 OPS, I think 794. Yeah, after tonight. So he is on the verge of cracking into that echelon of hitter. I do think that, and he didn't hit third tonight, but I love Duran in the three hole when you have Roman leading off. And I know to maybe old school kind of baseball enjoyers, that sounds backwards because, you know, for me growing up, you have your fastest guy hit first. As long as they're a capable hitter, the fast guy hits first. You have a contact guy hit second. Your best hitter hits third. And then your cleanup guy is a power guy. But I think nowadays, the way that teams are looking at it, you want your best on base guy hitting first. And I think that's, if it's not already, it will eventually be Roman Anthony. And then you want your best hitter hitting second because you want them to hit with at least one runner on base as much as possible. And then I think Duran is that perfect number three guy because he's going to have Roman Anthony and Alex Bregman on base. He's going to see better pitches. He's not going to be as prone to chasing because he's going to get more pitches in the zone. And he can run more, too, because it's not like, oh, Darren, we don't want you to run. Alex Bregman's up. What if you get thrown out? Then now Bregman doesn't have a guy on base. He's more free to run. So I just think it's a great fit. Again, I mentioned this, I believe, last episode or the one before. Kudos to Alex Cora and Pete Fatsy for making that change. I think that is going to be, for the most part, the long-term look of the Red Sox lineup going forward.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I think one thing that it's brought that I don't even know if it was anticipated, because the three hole is not, it is a pressure packed spot in the lineup, but think about what goes into being a leadoff hitter. Like, you're home at Fenway Park, you play the field, you're in the outfield, you're playing left field. It's the furthest spot away from the home dugout. You run all the way and you grab your stuff. You got to get ready to hit and get ready to hit fast. Being in the three hole, like I said, even though it's a pressure packed spot in the lineup, you come up with guys on base early in the order. Like, that's one of the big bopper spots in the lineup. But I think it has allowed him to take some pressure off himself. And for a guy like Duran, if you know anything about Jaren Duran at this point, he puts a shit ton of pressure on himself and there is no way around it. That's just the way he is. And it's the way he's always going to be. So any way you can alleviate some of that, take some of the pressure off of him, I think is a good thing. And all of the stuff, all the physical things that go into it, especially something like allowing him to run because he's not hitting in front of Anthony and Bregman, I think is good. I think that, you know, he was hitting before they moved him to third, but I think it's really allowed him to tap in because the power has really started to come since he's hitting third. And he's got this little like pimp job thing going with his swing, this one-handed, really sexy finish that I just like. I don't think you saw that with Duran homers even last year, which he's not going to hit as many homers this year as he did last year. But I mean, he looks like a freaking power hitter when he does it. And you saw two homers in Minnesota with it and one of them at Fenway in game one, where he pimps the shit out of these things just with the follow through. And it goes a long fucking way. Like, whatever he's got going on with that pimp job, it turns him into like these home runs are like Barry Bonds homers.
He doesn't get cheated. When he hits a home run, it's usually like a nuke. And that's another thing, Gordo. The knock that I've at least given to Jaren Duran is he's 28 years old. So he's not old yet, but you know, how long does a guy with like 95th percentile speed, how long will he be able to maintain that? And is he good when he doesn't have that speed? If he's able to tap into a little bit more power, then that speed is a little bit less important. Still a huge part of his game, but just a little less important if he can add a different tool to the tool belt, which will help him age better. So that's just, if you're one of those people who really doesn't want to see Jaren Duran moved in any scenario, I think that's part of your argument that you got to be using, the tapping into more power.
Joe?
I do just got to certify what you guys are talking about with Duran batting third. I don't know if this is included or not, but five games he's batting third. He's batting .381. He's got two home runs. He's got a .435 on base. His OPS is 1.292 in those five games that he's batting third. So
he's
like
been crushing, man.
Like
he's
you guys crushing. Said, Cora and Fatsy found some magic.
He's a great ball player. And, you know, going into the season, I think there was a lot of fair skepticism as to whether he could repeat what he did last year. And understandably, like that year was going to be tough to follow up. And defensively, you know, he made a great play in game one. It was a tough one in game two that you could tell he was mad at himself. I thought he got hurt on that one where he jumped in.
I thought it was like a leg.
It looked like his leg kind of buckled from under him, and then he stayed down for a little bit, but actually it looked like he was maybe just pissed at himself, but I thought he was hurt. The defense obviously has, like, I think he's more comfortable in center field, but even so, like, he wasn't going to follow up what he did last season defensively. And, you know, even offensively, he probably wasn't going to follow it up. But the fact that he's showing, like, hey, you can look at the WAR on my baseball reference page all you want, but go watch me play tonight, and I can show you how electric of a player I can be. And pretty much every night he's been doing it, and it is a huge part. Like, obviously the Red Sox have been getting some great pitching, and we'll talk about it. But Jared Duran's spark plug has been a huge reason why they've gone on this run.
I thought last year when people were calling him a leader, I didn't really see it that way. I think this year, I don't know if I'd call him, I don't know if leader is the right word, and obviously we're not in the clubhouse, but like, I think he's like, how do you put it? Not leader, but he's a key, like one of the main guys, like one of the main vibe guys. Like, maybe he's not like, come on guys in the locker room, rah, rah, team, let's go together. But he's like a glue guy that everyone seems to like, and he's funny, and he's cool to be around. He fires the guys up. I think Bregman is more of your traditional leader type. But Duran, it's still, he helps out with that stuff, and I think that matters. Like I said last episode, all the Red Sox teams that have won the World Series, or even the 2021 team, they've all gotten along very well and had a good, kind of funny almost vibe, especially the 2004 team. Those guys were hilarious. So I think that matters in Boston. You got to be able to laugh again, because there's people like us out there who have podcasts, radio stuff. So got to be able to laugh. This team seems funny. Again, the airplane thing, I think that's hilarious. So yeah, man, the vibes are just off the chart.
Okay. In terms of the leadership thing, last year, even though you're right, they tried to sell Jaren Duran as one of the leaders of the team, but to me, it felt like the leadership was this nucleus of Ref Snyder and Story. And when Story got hurt and he went back to Texas, it was like, okay, you've got Ref Snyder and you need someone else. And okay, we're going to make Jaren that guy. And it kind of, okay, I guess I'm going to be that guy. This year, it feels like you've got like this four-man nucleus of Bregman, Story, Ref Snyder, Duran. And they lead in different ways. Because you're right, like, Duran's not going to be the one going up quizzing guys on the pitchers they're about to face. But Duran is a lead by example guy. He's a guy that guys feel comfortable going up to and asking questions, because Duran's been pretty outspoken about how hard it was for him to come up without those guys making themselves, you know, available to him to feel like he could ask questions. I do think he's a leader on this team. It's not in the super, because Bregman is your ultra traditional leader, like a guy who's going to rally the troops.
Pedroia-ish.
Pedroia, that's a great comp. He's a Pedroia-ish leader. But there are other types of leaders, and Duran is leading in his own way. And yeah, I think that's a big reason why, like, when you wonder why the front office wasn't willing to include one of their outfielders in a trade for Joe Ryan, which the Twins reporter from The Athletic, his name is slipping my mind, but he said that the Twins wanted that and the Red Sox weren't willing to engage there. And, you know, obviously, Duran has played the way he's played on the field, but that leadership is also a big part of this. He's a huge part of that clubhouse. And even if he wasn't playing to the level that he's playing right now, taking him out of there was going to be a big thing.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Thing.
So, on a similar note, not to be negative, I'm not 100% sure the rotation has a leader like that. And I don't know I've never been a Major League Baseball player, believe it or not, Gordo. I don't know if a rotation needs that, but based on all the past great Red Sox teams, I think it's good to have a leader. Again, the first thing people are going to say is, what about Garrett Crochet? Garrett Crochet is 26 years old. I know he looks like a grown-ass man and he's scary and he's an ace, but that's a lot to put on a guy who's think back to what you were like at 26, if you're listening. Probably not ready to lead a Major League Baseball team, a rotation like that in an off-the-field kind of way. That's a lot. Walker Buehler would have been that guy, but can you be the leader when you're barely hanging on to a roster spot and your performance is detrimental to the team? Giolito, maybe. Maybe he can be the guy, but I don't know.
It's an interesting concept you bring up, because Cora was asked about this earlier in the year, and he said Crochet has become that guy. But when he says it, you almost feel like you almost take it like you took it when they said Duran was the leader last year, where it's like, okay, but then you have all the factors that you just said. It's like, you know, Crochet's figuring out on the fly right now how he's going to make it through his first full season of full innings. And yeah, newsflash, 7 innings, 2 earned today. And honestly, he pitched better than that line would suggest. I thought he looked incredible tonight.
Yeah, he had one inning where sixth inning, he threw a lot of pitches and it kind of messed up the final stat line. But it was, I mean, what are we talking about? Seven innings, 2 earned runs, 8 hits.
Ground ball that bounced over Bregman's head.
Yeah, like, okay. Yeah, like, true. Yeah,
Bobby Witt's double. How high. Bobby Witt's double that got him to second base probably is a flyout in like every other ballpark.
Yeah, triple. That was a triple. You got triple out of that friggin' thing. Yeah, but that's how high the bar is. And Garrett Crochet, in a good way, has done this to himself. We expect so much, and he just keeps fucking delivering. It's insane. I was texting my dad about this. This is the most must-watch pitcher since 2017, Chris Sale. He was great in 2018, but 2017 was that season where it was just like, oh my God, every time this guy pitches, it's like, well, why even bother coming up to the plate? He's unhittable. That's what it feels like. Yeah, yeah. Crochet's not going to get that many, but he like just so dominant every night. And the amount of innings he's pitching is so much more than he's ever pitched. And I want to give more credit to Cora and Andrew Bailey here for managing his innings, like the added off days they're getting with the string of Thursday break days that they have, and then pushing him back 9 days before his start on Tuesday as we record. Good job stretching him out to a place he's never been before without overdoing it, is I guess what I'm trying to say. And it makes me feel good about the concept of him staying on the field, which was the big question with Garrett Crochet, is could he stay on the field? Had arm issues in the past, and so far there's been, knock on wood, nothing this year.
So his last game before game two of this Royal series was the Kershaw game against the Dodgers. So
wow,
they went on this whole run. Let's see, 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, 3-1, 4-1, 5-1, 6-1, 7-1. They 8 games without Garrett Crochet, and they went 7-1 in those games. And
what was the
loss was the stupid rain delay thing with the Twins. They could easily be on a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 game win streak right now.
You know what, Gordo? The reason I forgot that one, it doesn't count.
It doesn't.
Not a loss. It's an unofficial loss. I'm not counting it. Jordan Hicks, I'm going to just make something up. And
he got up and he sat down and he got back up again. It doesn't count.
Okay. Sammy, I don't give him that much. I think he hit his head. He tripped and hit his head, and he was dizzy trying to pitch. That's why. I mean, I know he got up, got down, got back up again, but he threw a ball between a guy's feet. Come on. It was so bad. But that doesn't count. It was stupid. It doesn't count. So they're on a 10-game winning streak. Congrats to the Red Sox for winning 10 games in a row, unofficially declared by Playtesi, the 10-game longest winning streak in baseball right now. Wow.
But like, you look into why they're able to go on a run like that without Crochet pitching in almost any of the games. And you look at the starting pitching they're getting. Like last pod, we talked about what Cooper Criswell was able to do and, you know, being able to win despite a couple of rocky ones from Buehler. But look no further than Brian Baio and Lucas Giolito. Like, we talk about at the trade deadline, the need for a number two starter. And so much of that conversation stems from the fact that for the first couple months of the year, it really did feel like the Red Sox had an ace and then a collection of maybe a couple of fours and some fives. Like, that's how it felt. Baio wasn't letting in earned runs, but it was pretty lucky. The FIP told the story. The expected stats told the story. The eye test told the story. But In his last 12 games, no, like it's far from lucky. He has been that dude. Last 12 games, every single one of them, 5-plus innings pitched. 10 of the 12 games have been 6-plus innings pitched. Every single one of those 12 games, 3 earned runs or less. He's got a 2.61 ERA in that stretch of 12 games. Like, that's an extended run of pitching like a number 2 starting pitcher. That's a guy who you can send out into a playoff game and face any of these teams in the American League and feel good about it. Look, no, and we'll get to Giolito next, but let's talk about Bale. Like, how has he turned it? I don't even want to say turned his season. How has he put in the season that he has? He's got a 3.03 ERA for the year. He's about to get this thing below 3 with another good start.
Honestly, I think Alex Cora and Will Fleming both mentioned this. I heard Will Fleming say it on one of the broadcasts. Bayo's last Sunday start, his last day game, because we were talking about how has he figured out day games. And Will Fleming said, I think Alex Cora was onto something when he said he became a father. Brian Bale became a father. Now he's up early all the time. And it's not just that, though. It's not that he's up early often. It was a maturity thing with him. He would mope around on the mound when he did something, when he would walk a guy. He would walk in a circle around the mound, bad body language. The next pitch, he would yank a fastball 6 inches off the plate, take the ball back in his glove. He'd smack the ball, be all angry about it. And then it would just spiral. It's a 5-run inning and he's out of the game and you're pissed off. Like, what the hell, Bayo? You were doing fine. It was just one walk and then it's all meltdown. That's an immaturity thing. When you become a father, you can't do that anymore. You got to grow up. You're now taking care of someone. And I think he's taken that mindset and you can see it on the field. He's just so much more calm in the face of adversity now. And that's something we hadn't seen in years past with him. And he's still young. So I don't want to, you know, get on him too much for that. He's not the first guy to ever act like that. And he's not going to be the last. But to see the adjustments he's made, I'm not trying to be funny here. I genuinely think that him becoming a father and having to take on a more mature stance on life, I think that has shown itself on the field in the way he pitches. And the results have been fantastic.
Yeah, and it goes back to really the midway point of last season when he had that awful start against Toronto, and then they skipped a start, and then he came back against the Marlins the next start, and he was good, and for the rest of that season he pitched really well. It's like a mid-3 ERA, and dating back to then, and obviously they've been tweaking with his pitch mix. Like, even this year they've been tweaking with it. Obviously the cutter has been a big part of where he's gone, but the sinker sweeper combo has been good, and it feels like there's more room to grow because it feels like they're just kind of now re-unlocking that changeup, getting that pitch to be the strength that it was early on. The crazy thing about what Bayo's doing is there's still more room to grow with him. It's why everyone was so high on him when he first came up. Like, you have, like, maybe people were a little bit presumptuous, but with throwing out like the whole ace thing, and obviously the whole next Pedro thing was
Pedro
obviously unfair. Getting that changeup back to what it was when he first came up, when that pitch kind of carried him, like who knows where this could go for him? Like, right now, it doesn't feel like this is the peak. It feels like he's been terrific, but it feels like there's room to grow. And as he harnesses his command, allows fewer base runners, like, keep it going. I don't feel like it's about to stop with him.
And even if it did, man, even if this was the peak, and if Brian Bayo's a guy who gives you a 3.03 ERA a year, that's a number 2 starter. That's outstanding. So I'm like, I agree with you. I don't think this is all he's got, but if it is, I'm not
good. Yeah, you're happy.
I think he's been outstanding. And I remember about the changeup specifically. I remember coming on here, it's like 2 months ago, and being like, where is the changeup? What happened to it? It's 6 miles an hour faster than it used to be. It doesn't look like the same pitch. There's not the separation between it and the fastball. I'm like, how is this guy going to survive without it? But it's back. He looks great. This is, I mean, goes without saying, most obvious thing ever. This is by far the best he's ever looked in his career. He's also yoked now. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Dude,
like, his
throwing forearm, it's crazy.
It's huge. He has freaking enormous. And yeah, he had big arms last year, but I just remember watching him pitch the other day. I was like, "Woo, bro, been hitting the gym." So yeah, Bayo becoming an adult through childbirth and in the gym.
And the other one is Lucas Giolito. Like, again, we talked about this team sort of feeling like it's got an ace and some fives and maybe a couple fours. It's right now it's an ace and a couple of twos, and we'll see what Dustin May is, and then hopefully they can figure out what to do with the number five spot. But it's an ace and a couple of twos because of what Bayo is doing, what we just talked about, but also what Lucas Giolito is doing. Last 10 games, a 2.03 ERA. Like, this is a guy who, when he first came back, his first start looked really good, but after that it was, oh man, like a couple starts mixed in there where it was blowups. And then it was, he had a seven, I think it was an inning and two thirds, seven earned. He blew up. And that was the last start before this 10 game run where he's just been dominant. And you know, he probably is like, maybe one thing that Red Sox fans don't exactly want to look in the eye just yet. He's going to hit that 140 innings. Like he's going to get that mutual option, and he's obviously going to decline it and become a free agent. And like, yeah, Sox can offer him a qualifying offer, but this is a guy who has earned every last bit of it. Like, this is not a guy who deserves to get stuck on a 1 year, 14 or whatever, 14, I think it is $1 million deal. If yep. he doesn't reach the 140 innings, like, no, this is a guy who deserves to cash in on the season he's having, because he's been a veteran. He's been a stabilizing force. I'm sure it was humbling to have the experience that he had in 2023 when his season came crashing down. He got traded twice, hits free agency off a terrible finish, signs a one-year deal, immediately partially tears the UCL and has to miss the entire 2024 season, and comes back in 2025 and no one believes in him. And mm-hmm. to follow that with what he's done is nothing short of spectacular. And every time he's on the mound, you feel good about your chances to win the game. And I love the way he talks about the game. I love the way he sees the game. He's maybe the best interview on the team. His quotes are fantastic, and not like most of the time when you say a guy's quotes are fantastic, it's because he's saying crazy shit. No, like Lucas is just, he's a smart guy. He's a real guy. He's not afraid. And he goes out there and he performs. And whether it's him or Bayo starting game two in the playoff series that the Red Sox will be playing, you're going to feel good about it.
Yeah, I think he's the quintessential example of when you roll the dice on a guy like Giolito, who has been that ace-ish number two caliber starting pitcher in the past, you have to give them time. You can't give them 10 starts to figure out how to pitch again in Major League Baseball after getting a brand new UCL or whatever. Pat's not here to explain the details, but after getting a brand new elbow, basically needs time, and he looks great. I love that when Giolito is locked in, and Gordo, I feel like this is something you would have noticed too. When he's locked in and he strikes someone out, he stomps around the mound with his shoulders all wide and his arms out, like he's like, yeah,
like he should remember where the wild things are, like home.
Yeah, yeah, that's what he does.
He definitely just botched that name. What's that called? The book, like the wild things.
Yeah, where the wild things are.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. I saw the images on the cover right when you said it. The yellow things with the arms out. Yeah. yeah, it was a good shout. That was a good shout. Ah, see, I'm not that much, not that old. We had the same kids' books. So the next thing with Giolito, I think would be to the strikeout rate. He's been kind of inconsistent with that. I did notice his last start, he took a little bit of velocity off the fastball. That seemed very intentional. That didn't seem like his arm was hurting or anything. Seemed like he did that in favor of better command, and it worked. So maybe that's the key, ramp back up speed-wise. But that would be the next step for Giolito to completely reclaim his old form. And that's not me complaining about how he's pitching now. That's just me, you know, nitpicking. How can he get even better?
Joe?
So then I want to follow up then on that, what you guys were saying, that Giolito's going to hit the innings and he's going to hit the free agent mark. Yeah, those are where the wild things are. glad we certified all that. Glad we certified all that and you were able to make it.
That's Giolito pitching well.
What was that again? How does he stomp around?
He's like a home, home, home. And then he just strikes out 10 more batters.
Yeah. Pretty much. But anyway, my question for you guys, you said Giolito's going to hit his innings market. He's probably going to decline the option. He's probably going to be a free agent. What does the contract look like? And if you were the Red Sox, would you bring him back?
That's such a hard question to answer because
I know we're talking present because this team is so damn awesome, but
like, let's say he finishes with a 3.5 ERA and let's see what are the strikeouts out, like 130 strikeouts in 100.
People think
Gordo's doing math. Gordo's typing so fast.
I'm trying to figure out, is he 29 right now?
He's 31. He just turned 31.
He's 31. Oh, I didn't. Okay.
Yeah, his birthday was last month.
Oh, shout out Giulio. Happy birthday, Lucas. Month belated.
I don't know, Joe. I'd probably be like conservative and give him like 10 years, $500 million, call it a day.
Yeah. Maybe 10 years, 470 if you want a nickel and dime guy.
Can. Yeah.
I would in all seriousness, I bet it would be a 4-year pretty high AAV deal. If he keeps this up, it's like maybe it's like a 4 years 80-ish. And if he kind of stumbles a little bit, it could be kind of like the John Gray 4 years 50. But yeah, I think he's in for a payday. If he gets past that, I mean, he's going to have the qualifying offer attached to him if he opts out of it, obviously. So that could hurt him a little bit. But he deserves it. And you know,
but if it's that kind of deal, would you bring him back?
It's tough because I want Lucas Giolito on the team, but they also have a ton of young pitchers and they've got the ammo to trade for a cost controlled guy. I want Lucas on the team, but it's a tough question to ask because I need to see what the state of the pitching looks like after the season.
I think I would go four years, like 60 something.
Maybe give him the Nathan Eovaldi deal. What did they give Eovaldi after the World Series? Let me go check on that. Was it 4 years, 76 or something?
That feels like a 4 and 72, something like
that. That sounds right.
Did Joe just pull that?
I pulled that right out of my ass. So if it's
with your
right,
anabolic steroids,
yeah, Joe, you're used to reaching down there with needles now, huh?
No comment.
Joe Ryan went to Drake High School.
What is 17 times 4? 4 years, 61. 68?
51. I just did that. 17 times 4 would be
68.
So that's 3. 51. Yeah. 68.
That's 68.
68. So it's okay. 4 years, 68. With inflation, with baseball inflation, 4 years, 70. 4 years, 80.
Whoa. Wow.
I don't.
It's too much. I'm sorry.
We're going to talk all offseason about it, man.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I want him on the
team. It's a good question, though. Good question, though, Joe. I love Lucas.
I love Lucas, man.
I mean, if he's giving you 3.5, if he's giving you 3.5 ERA, 165 innings, that's so valuable. That's huge. And if you can rely on him in a playoff scenario, I mean, that's borderline number two star, number two or number three kind of type.
Ooh. What did Eduardo Rodriguez sign for when he was a free agent? I'm trying to think of recent free agents who signed like
not a bad contract though, like a big.
Yeah, but I'm just like the year he had before the deal was okay. He 152 innings, 3.48 ERA. So like pretty similar to what Giolito. Obviously, you feel better. Like I do think Erod refusing the trade to the Dodgers in the middle of the season maybe limited his market as a free agent, as a guy who maybe doesn't care enough about winning. And Giolito is the exact opposite of that. What did he sign for? Oh, God, this is too much math.
Did he get like $21 million? Did he get a lot?
It was $14 million the first year, then $20, then $21, then $19.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's like, I mean, so yeah, I mean, it's right around in that territory, I feel like. Who knows?
All right.
But
and then they're also going to have to talk about Chapman. I'd consider bringing him back too. I mean, we should stop talking about the season as if it's over. We still got 2 months to go with this shit.
Here, I've one more guy I want to shout out before we get to Enough Said, because I know we got to get to Enough Said. But we can't go this whole podcast without talking about what Trevor Story has done. And obviously, you know, we had so many conversations on this show about, well, what do you do with Trevor Story? Like the conversations in May were DFA or bench. Like that was the conversation.
Whoa. No, don't loop me in with that. That was you and Pat. I never got there. Never said that.
Story? No, come on. Don't. No. You said you'd consider a DFA. You said you'd rather DFA than bench. You did say that. You did say DFA.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm not putting Trevor Story on the bench. If you're going to bench him, just get rid of the guy. But I was like, just let him figure it out. Honestly, they didn't really have the backup plan at the time.
Well, Marcelo, they didn't have a choice. Once Bregman went down, they had no choice.
I'm the patient guy, though. I'm the patient guy. I wait. I'm cool waiting.
You're patient with Bueller.
Giolito too. Never said anything about Giolito. I'm very, very patient. But sometimes, to a fault. I'm not saying it's a good thing.
You are the most patient on the podcast. That's for sure. You are.
Yeah, I mean, but like with Bueller, it's backfired on me. So it's not always a good thing.
Who is less patient, me or Pat?
Oh.
It might be circumstantial.
I think Pat by a little bit. But sometimes Pat is right with that. So it's
Pat by a landslide. Pat by a landslide.
I'm trying to
saying Gordo, you're off the hook.
No, I feel like I go back and forth though, because I have some guys where I'm just like, I will ride. Like I would have ridden Jorge Alcala to the end of time, but like with Walker Buehler, I was out months ago.
Jorge Alcala's role on the team is much smaller than Trevor Story's role. I think it's a different conversation.
I was never on the DFA Story train. I said Platoon with Meyer. That's as far as I got.
I hear you. But the impatient thing was, it's not just you guys, a ton of people making judgments on the team in May. Oh, I'm talking about the team. That's where fans in general are mostly impatient. Like when they want to declare a team bad. It was a bad month. It happens to everyone.
They were bad, dude. It was tough. It was a tough one. Oh. Dude, we talked about it. What?
Oh, the Mariners just took the lead.
Okay, well, the Yankees went down in the eighth. I think Devin Williams blew it again. I'm getting a bunch of texts about Devin Williams.
Are you kidding me? Yeah, dude, this is insane. The Yankees are like, okay, here. Slightly off subject. Joe, don't kill me. Do you guys think the Yankees are going to make the playoffs?
We see this with them.
I think they will.
They always somehow, like, their July and August the last few years must not be good, because I feel like this is following the same script.
They're still going to suck.
Dude, they're going to be.
They're just going to suck less.
They're about to be a half game up on a playoff spot. I'll change my tone. They're not going to make it, dude. They're not going to make it.
I said 83 games. I had them winning 83 games. I got so much shit from Yankees fans for that.
Didn't you say like 51?
Yeah, on a fake graphic. That was awesome.
Oh, wait. Is it over? Yeah, the Yankees lost.
Good.
Jeez, man.
Oh, my God. So the Red Sox are 3.5. The Red Sox are 3.5 on top. Games ahead of them. Jeez, I can't speak. 3.5 games ahead of the Yankees. That's awesome. But
love that.
Let me get back to Trevor Story, because I know we're on a time crunch here, getting enough said. But in 57 games. No, okay. This is 56 games, because I don't have going into tonight. Or I do have going into tonight. He's hitting in his last 56 games, he's hitting 300 with 11 home runs and an 886 OPS. In his last 57 games, that includes tonight, he has 49 RBIs. 49 RBIs in 57 games for this guy that the conversation in May was bench or DFA or what? Like, what do you do? So, obviously, a leader on this team. He's a guy that you want up with men on base. Tonight, he came up in a tie game with two outs and two men on. And yeah, it wasn't necessarily a well-hit ball, but sometimes you just got to put the ball in play. And he did. It fell. He got two runs home. And when the Red Sox went up 3-1 in that game, and it's Crochet and then off to the bullpen, you felt pretty damn good about their chances. And you know, I don't know what his win probability added for the last 2 months of baseball has been, but it's got to be pretty high. Because with what he's done at the plate, talk about the RBIs, talk about the OPS, talk about the 11 homers. He's also done it on defense. And he's, even regardless of what the metrics say about him, he is such a stabilizing force at shortstop. Makes every play, makes all the routine plays, is great on his backhand. I feel so confident when the ball is hit to him. And for a guy who at the beginning of the season, going back to the plate here, when he came up with guys on base, it felt like he was going to get fastballs up and sliders away, and he's going to swing and miss at all of them. It's the exact opposite right now. You feel like that's a guy who has the ability to get in runs at any time.
He's great. When he can spit on those sliders away, you know that he's locked in. He's not chasing after him. Story's a guy that we, I think, have, as a fan base, have been patient-ish with. Not everyone, but I think that everyone is on the same page in that We all want to see Trevor Story succeed. Never heard a bad thing about the guy. Seems like someone who genuinely loves playing baseball. He wants to contribute. He hates that he hasn't been able to contribute. And he's probably thrilled right now that he's starting to click. This is the Trevor Story that we've been waiting for. I'm not saying the contract's not a bad contract anymore, but it's nice to kind of get something on the latter end. Kind of reminds me of John Lackey, a bad contract for years, and then he produces towards the end. You're like, oh, okay, we could salvage this. World Series, maybe. So, yeah, just win the World Series, dude. And then the contract's
all you gotta
fine.
Do.
That's it. Also, by the way, win probability added. I love that stat. I got no clue how it's calculated at all.
None.
Not a clue. I don't think anyone has it. Like, FIP? I can explain how FIP works. Yeah, OPS plus, I can explain that to you. Win probability added, nobody knows what that shit is, but we know what it's trying to measure, and it's fun. It gets the people going.
And I want to say I saw the league leaders in win probability added, and I think Crochet was like top three, which makes sense because they win like every game he pitches at this point, which is weird. Remember when they didn't win every game he pitched early on? Like, they were like 500 in his starts for a while.
Yeah,
how good is it to get past that?
Yeah, it feels like a different team from earlier on. Hey, law of averages.
Yeah, it's law of averages.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Let's go to some enough said. You want to go first or second, Sam? I just called you
Sam. I'll go first.
I'm never doing that again.
Don't ever call me that.
Does anyone call you Sam?
My mom and sister both do. That's it.
Huh.
Mom, sister, and sometimes girlfriend.
Did you ever think when you were a kid, like, I'm going to grow up and then my name is going to change to Sam? Or were you just like, I'm always just going to be Sammy?
Honestly, I thought about that so much as a kid. I thought of, like, when do I have to change to Sam? Can I just stay Sammy? I really like Sammy Sosa. I don't want to change. I swear, I really used to think about that. But no, my enough said. Want to give a shout out to the women on Nessun, Emma Tiedemann, Alana Rizzo, and our friend of the program, Natalie Nori, who saw me eat wasabi. Yeah, she had to see me suffer and sweat trying to eat the wasabi at the Wasabi Challenge.
She had to sprint to the bathroom.
Oh yeah, we almost lost Bradfo for good. She's seen a lot. Great job on the broadcast. I enjoyed listening to it. I'm sure it's probably daunting to just step into that booth and, like, here you go, it's yours tonight. Emma specifically, I'm used to listening to her on the Sea Dogs broadcast because I love Sea Dogs, dude. Big Sea Dogs guy. And then Alana, she's very well known at this point. And then Natalie's like a rising star in the game too. So thought it was cool to see. Great job by Nessun. Great job by the ladies. Great job by everyone. And the Sox won.
Sox won. Okay, here's my enough said. Maybe this is controversial. Maybe it's not. I'm kind of, and like, I recognize that like in a couple of years, like, we're never going to have this again, but I'm kind of over the whole Mike Yastrzemski thing. Like, it's kind of to me turning into the Danny Jansen playing for two teams in the same game. Like, every time the Red Sox play a Mike Yastrzemski team, like, we got all the, everyone's going to write a story about, it's grandpa was Yaz, and it's, oh my God, Mike Yastrzemski's playing at Fenway Park. Oh my God, the tradition. Oh my God, the name. And it's like, when he first came to Fenway Park with the Giants, that was like the coolest thing ever. Like, Yaz threw out the first pitch to him. But now every time he comes back or plays the Red Sox, another one, it's like the Aaron Civale striking out David Ortiz in spring training. And, he spends his summers in Marshfield. It's like, I love Mike Yastrzemski, and I recognize that he probably doesn't have a ton of time left in his career, so maybe I should just, like, appreciate this while it's still here, because we're never, in all likelihood, going to have another Yaz walking around playing Major League Baseball. But, like, man, like, it's enough is enough. It's enough.
That's it. I'm not going to lie. That did cross my mind. It did cross my mind today. I'm like,
Gordo, are you going to offer condolences to this?
To, like, when he retires?
No, are you giving us condolences right now?
For what?
And, like, time to get rid of the Yastrzemski name from Fenway Park in Boston.
Whoa. No, that's a fart. Yeah, just take the number 8 down, man. Like, get rid of
why can't you be like Sammy and enjoy the old days when Yaz was
playing? Yeah. Dang right. I remember his rookie season. By the way, speaking of old, Mike Yastrzemski's 34. I thought he was 27. What? That's crazy to me. Obviously, I didn't really.
A long time to get to the majors.
How old was he as a rookie, Sammy? It had to be late 20s.
He was 28.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, and he was great as a rookie. What is this, 122 OPS plus, 852 OPS? He got MVP votes in 2020.
Dude, I remember when I want to say that he was in the Orioles farm system. And here we are just like talking about Mike Yastrzemski again, which I said people need to stop doing. We're just going to do it. He came to Fenway, or he would go to JetBlue Park every time, like the Ori or whoever he was with would come, just because it's like, oh, he may not be able to do that. Like, let's let him go to Fenway, play against the Red Sox because it's cool. And it's like, okay, no, here he is in the big leagues every year playing the Red Sox, and we're going to have to talk about it every single time. Just like
Let him go to Fenway. Treating him like a weirdo. His initials are May, M-A-Y.
We got to wrap this thing up. Just quick shout out at the very end to Mike Yastrzemski for playing a series at Fenway Park. That was really cool to see. Always cool to see a Yastrzemski at Fenway Park.
Oh, one thing. Mike Yastrzemski's middle name is Andrew, and the Red Sox used to have Andrew Miller.
Wow. There you go.
There you have
Andrew
it.
Miller. I did not like Andrew Miller.
Oh, my God. Who the hell cares?
And that's going to do it for episode 247 of Play Tessie. We're riding this wave, baby. We'll be back here in a couple days, hopefully. I mean, man, there's only one game played between now and when our next pod drops. So hopefully they win it, sweep the Royals, and we'll talk some more Sox. But remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. And then find us on WEI's YouTube channel. You can subscribe there. You can find the Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on all the videos. And then find us on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. For Sammy, for Joe producing, for Lucas Giolito stomping around the mound like the dude and Where the Wild Things Are, it is Gordo from Play Tessie. Sox have won 7 in a row. Let's make it 8. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station today on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.